Hey everybody, welcome to Neon Badges. My name is Anthony King, and this time around I've got a special episode for you all. For the past 10 years, F This Movie has been a beacon of movie love on the internet. Their slogan, Movie Love for Movie Lovers, is no exaggeration, and I'm very excited to be able to share a conversation I had with the editor-in-chief and host of F This Movie, Patrick Bromley. Patrick is a teacher, a critic, a writer on sites like Daily Dead and Bloody Disgusting, as well as F This Movie, and he's one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever had the pleasure of listening to. About 5 years ago, I came across the F This Movie podcast and started reading everything I could on the site. It's the only site that I read every day, and I couldn't be more proud to now be counted among its stable of fabulous writers. I asked Patrick to share five of his favorite cop movies, and he happily obliged, so let's get right to it. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Awesome. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's just start talking about this. Let's hear what you got.
My first two picks are incredibly obvious. My first pick is RoboCop.
What is it about RoboCop? Would you call that your favorite, maybe, cop movie from the 80s?
Yeah, I would say so. I think, you know, RoboCop is a pretty perfect movie. And I like a lot of, like you, I like a lot of cop movies, even though it's a weird time to be enjoying cop movies.
Right.
And I know you've said as much, you know, on Twitter and on the show, like, RoboCop for me is just like a pretty perfect movie, and it's a movie that can be enjoyed as a straightforward action movie, but it's a movie that's probably better enjoyed as a subversive satire of police and of 80s action movies. Like yesterday, I was trying to solidify a couple things on my list, and I rewatched Dirty Harry because I was like, well, maybe Dirty Harry's on my list, and it's not. But, I mean, it's a cool movie, but it's like, it really is the template for so much of A, what's wrong with actual police, but also B, the sort of cop movie genre, and RoboCop is the movie that kind of takes the piss out of all of that because Paul Verhoeven is so incapable of making a straightforward action movie. He has to subvert the thing that he's doing, and sort of critique it. And so I love that about RoboCop, that it's a great action movie. If you just want this cool action movie where a robot cop shoots people and the bad guys are amazingly slimy and terrible, whether it's like the street level bad guys or sort of the corporate bad guys. So good, in fact, that apparently they're getting their own spinoff, right?
What do you think about that?
I think it's a ridiculous idea that I hope never sees the light of day.
Right. Yeah. What, a prequel like following Dick Jones or something like that? Is that what it is?
Yeah. No one needs that ever.
Yeah. No thanks.
Like, I would rather have a prequel where, you know, we just see Murphy as a guy. But again, I don't want that because the appeal of RoboCop is that he's a RoboCop, not just cop.
Right.
So. But yeah, RoboCop is definitely my favorite, one of my favorite movies, period. One of my favorite 80s action movies, and certainly one of my favorite, or my favorite 80s cop movie.
Sure. What do you think about the sequels and the remake?
You know, I think there's some really interesting ideas in both of the sequels. I don't think either one is entirely successful. I know that especially RoboCop 2 has kind of a cult following. I want to be there. I'm not quite there. There's a lot of stuff in it that I like. You know, I think the whole idea of Tom Noonan as a sort of RoboCop 2 is interesting. I think the idea of Nuke is interesting, but there's just maybe too many things going on in that movie. And then the same is true of RoboCop 3. As much as I love Fred Dekker and want to be on board with RoboCop 3, it doesn't all come together. I think it's better than its reputation, but I don't think it's a successful movie. And the remake, you know, it's not the worst, but I don't think it works. And truth be told, I usually forget that there is a remake.
Yeah.
It's not a movie that pops up into my head very often, like the remake of Point Break. Like someone has to remind me, you know, they remade that movie. Oh, right. They did. And that's kind of how I am with RoboCop also.
Yeah. I wonder why, if they thought there was, I mean, it seemed like some sort of cash grab thing, but it's a weird decision. Like, why would you remake that one? I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there's often a choice because perfect movies tend to be beloved. They think, well, there's an audience for that, so let's redo it. And it's like, no, 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 we love it because it's perfect. Remake something that's flawed. Remake something that didn't work. You know, something that you can't remake RoboCop 2 without remaking RoboCop. I get it. But RoboCop 2 is the perfect kind of movie to remake, where it's like there's good stuff in there. There's good ideas. There's even an IP if that's the thing that you need. But it doesn't all work. And so that's the kind of thing you remake. You don't remake the perfection of RoboCop.
Right.
And Paul Verhoeven is hard to remake, as we saw from the Total Recall remake. Like, you can't, he is so singular. He's very hard to redo, because, you know, the remake of RoboCop misses most of the satire and kind of goes for a much more serious human drama, which is a take, you know, and that's kind of interesting. I've only seen it the one time, like the weekend it opened. I only have seen it that one time. Maybe I'm due for a revisit, but I don't remember loving it.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on the sequels or the remake?
I've never seen any of the sequels or the remake.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I never had any desire to see the remake. My wife brings it up every now and then because she likes, you know, the guy from The Killing.
Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah, Joel Kinnaman. That's right.
Yeah.
And I have 2 and 3 on Blu-ray, but it's not like they're the first things I think about when I come down to grab a movie, you know?
Right. Sure.
Someday I'll watch them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think everybody kind of, it seems like they share your feelings for the sequels, which isn't, that's another thing that kind of pushes me away. Like, well, it's not something I feel like I need to go out and see. You know, I feel like there are so many other movies that I should watch, you know, before RoboCop 2 or RoboCop 3.
Sure. Yeah. I wish I had your willpower. Because there's so many movies I need to see, and I've seen RoboCop 3 like 4 times.
That's me with Garden State for some reason.
Okay.
Oh, it's not a good movie. It's fine. I listened to you and Erica redo your list from whatever that year that was.
2004.
Yeah, yeah, and I was like, oh, it was on the original list. And it's not anymore. Okay.
It's not on the new list, but I still like it.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your second pick for a cop movie?
My second pick, also incredibly obvious, Die Hard. I didn't feel like you could make a list of favorite cop movies without including Die Hard, which is, for me, the best action movie ever made. Maybe not as good a cop movie in terms of what it has to say about being a police officer the way that RoboCop does. But he is, in fact, a New York cop fighting in Nakatomi Plaza. And Die Hard is another movie that I think is absolutely perfect. It is the greatest action movie ever made, as seen by the countless ripoffs and imitators, sequels. Again, you know, it obviously spawned a franchise, but there's a whole genre of film that is essentially, well, it's Die Hard in a, but the first one is pure action movie perfection.
If you had time to watch only one movie, are you watching RoboCop or Die Hard?
Boy, that's tough. I'm probably going to watch RoboCop because I think it just gives me a little more of what I want out of a movie, even though I love, love, love Die Hard.
Sure.
Love Die Hard. We'll never say a bad word about Die Hard. But if I had to pick one, it would probably be RoboCop.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think Die Hard is interesting because on an old show a few years ago, we were talking about 80s cop movies, which kind of spawned the idea for Neon Badges. There were 4 of us. And during that conversation, Die Hard never came up. And I was kind of just sitting back listening. And I brought it up. And you know, the 3 other people were like, oh, duh, that's like the greatest cop movie ever made, you know, type of thing. But so many people don't immediately think of Die Hard as a cop movie.
Right.
When in fact, your hero is a cop. Right. You know, he's a super cop taking down a terrorist cell, basically.
Right. Yeah, I guess because he could have been almost anything, you know, because it's more about wrong guy, wrong place, wrong time.
Sure.
I guess right guy, wrong place, wrong time is what I meant to say. So he could have been military special forces, which, again, we see in all of the ripoffs. You know, we have football players in The Taking of Beverly Hills in the wrong place at the wrong time. We have cooks in the wrong place at the wrong time and Under Siege, you know. So the fact that he's a cop is maybe slightly incidental, but he is in fact a cop.
Right. The episode before this one here, I'm talking about Pelham 123, the original Taking of Pelham 123. Yeah. And that kind of came from the glut of disaster movies from the 70s. And Joseph Sargent and the writers still considered Pelham to be one of those disaster movies. And it, you know, kind of is, you know, disaster movie in the subway system.
Right.
And then, you know, 10 years later, 12 years later, here comes Die Hard, kind of taking a new spin on the disaster movie where, you know, instead of the tower that is on fire, it's a tower that is filled with terrorists.
Right.
And then that, like you said, spawns countless ripoffs that, you know, are entertaining in their own right.
Oh, sure.
Just as, you know, The Towering Inferno kind of set off a bunch of ripoffs of disaster movies, Die Hard did the same. And, you know, people being trapped, you know, we love seeing people being trapped, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the things that I feel like even the Die Hard sequels don't get right, is that the claustrophobia, the self-containment of one building, even though it is a giant skyscraper, is what makes Die Hard so special. And each sequel opens it up a little bit more.
Right.
You know, Die Hard 2, we're confined to, well, an airport. Die Hard 3, it's the city of New York. Die Hard 4, we're hanging off of airplanes and running around. I think they're in L.A. for Die Hard 4. Die Hard 5, they're in all of Russia?
I gave up after Live Hard and Die Hard or
okay,
whatever
Good
it
Day
is.
To Die Hard, I think they're in Russia.
Oh my God.
Some Eastern European country. I don't remember, and I don't really like that movie. But
wow. Yeah, that's another one that kind of just, they just don't know when to quit. They like that.
You have,
is that cash grab
Courtney
again? Yeah. Oh, really?
His grown up son. Yeah, it's not good.
Jeez. Oh, all right. Okay. How about your third cop movie?
My third cop movie is a little bit of a cheat. He is technically a cop, but he's more, I guess, technically a Treasury agent. And that would be William Friedkin's To Live and Die in L.A.
That totally counts. You know, like the show is called Neon Badges. So I kind of open that up to law enforcement officers.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. As blasphemous as it is to say about The Exorcist and The French Connection and Sorcerer, To Live and Die in L.A. is my favorite William Friedkin movie. It does things that very few cop movies have done, and I won't say what because I feel like that would be spoiling certain aspects of the movie. But the first time I saw it, I remember being like, did they just do that? Great action, amazing cinematography, great score. Great William Peterson, like twitchy performance, great Willem Dafoe villain performance. John Pankow suddenly becomes the hero of an action movie for a couple of minutes. When are you ever going to see that again? I love To Live and Die in L.A.
Yeah, I love Peterson in that era, like Manhunter, you know, because he's, you know, he's a theater guy. And to me, his theatrics transfer really well to the screen. And even when, you know, he did CSI for however many years, his brand of theatrics, I think, really transfer well. And, you know, between Manhunter and To Live and Die in L.A., those are, I mean, two of my favorite performances of the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And that, I've only seen To Live and Die in L.A. the one time, but God, it does stick with you.
Yeah, yeah. It's very 80s, which has kind of made a comeback thanks to like synthesizer scores and a certain kind of neon drenched photography, because we have a generation of filmmakers now who grew up on 80s movies, and that's sort of what they're recreating. So that aesthetic has become very popular again. I think there was a time where it felt maybe dated or out of fashion. But it's really cool to see all that come back because I love that aesthetic. And Friedkin does it so well in To Live and Die in L.A. It's a movie that certainly has an audience, but I feel like it's still a little bit slept on. It's not like one of the go-to cop movies of the 80s. It's not even one of the go-to William Friedkin movies, but it's like if you talk to somebody who's seen it, both of you are in this club and you're like, yeah, cool movie. Like, that movie rules.
Yeah.
So I would love it, you know, to get a larger audience. I know Shout Factory put out a Blu-ray of it a couple years ago, which helps. But yeah, it's just such a special movie.
It is. I think Friedkin is great when he gets out of, you know, because, you know, you say William Friedkin, and I think most people, any general person is going to think The Exorcist first, right? But I think Friedkin can shoot outdoor spaces so well and turns that city, or, you know, like in Sorcerer, that jungle into a character, or, you know, I'm thinking of, what's with Matthew McConaughey, Chicken Leg?
Yeah, Killer Joe.
Killer Joe. Even, you know, that gross Texas town is a character, and I think Friedkin is great at that. And yeah, the way he shoots L.A., in To Live and Die is crazy good.
Yeah.
Hard to rival.
One of the best car chases ever, which is coming from the guy who sort of invented the car chase in The French Connection. And then I think, for my money, he kind of outdoes himself because he goes backwards on the freeway in Live and Die in L.A., you know?
Yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, man, what a gorgeous movie.
Yeah.
All right, what's your next?
Next is the one that I revisited last night that I was like, I think this is going to be on the list, but I'm not sure. And then I rewatched it, and yeah, for sure it's on the list. And that's from, I think, 1981. I'm jumping all out of order here. Directed by Burt Reynolds, and that is Sharky's Machine, based on a novel. It's, for me, it's the best movie that Burt Reynolds directed. It's, I won't say it's my favorite of his, because obviously you have Deliverance in the running, you have Smokey and the Bandit in the running, but of certainly the 80s period, Burt Reynolds, it's my favorite. Really great supporting cast. You have Charles Durning playing his boss. You have Bernie Casey stealing the movie as his partner. You have Henry Silva playing just the scariest bad guy. I was watching it with my wife and she said, "Oh, that man's face is scary." And I was like, yeah, that's exactly how you're supposed to react to Henry Silva. He looks like just not enough skin that's been stretched over a skull. He looks like Frank Langella in Masters of the Universe. Oh, like, that's what Henry Silva kind of looks like. He's a weird looking dude, but he's great at playing bad guys. And Rachel Ward in her first movie. It's probably, you know, 20 to 25 minutes too long, but there's all this great stuff. There's a whole sequence where he's kind of falling in love with Rachel Ward just by watching her. You know, he's kind of on a stakeout. There's all this great dialogue with him and Bernie Casey. An amazing sequence near the end of the film where Bernie Casey has been shot, but he keeps calling Burt Reynolds back to tell him one more thing. Like, it becomes comical, like a really good sense of humor in the movie. It's one of my absolute favorite, and I love a lot of Burt Reynolds movies, but this is one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, I haven't seen Sharky's Machine. Looking at his list here, so like Sharky's Machine, haven't seen Stroker Ace. You're a fan of that, right?
Or it's a ridiculous movie, but yes, I'm absolutely a fan of Stroker Ace.
Okay, so Stroker Ace I haven't seen, and then Heat I haven't seen. But his next two, for some reason, you know, late 80s, early 90s, Burt's doing just the most ridiculous movies. But Malone, I really like Malone.
Yeah, Malone's a good one.
And then I like Rent-A-Cop myself. I think it's, you know, it's cute. I like Liza. I think she's fucking hysterical.
Yeah, they're really fun together.
Super fun together. And I think that's... Yeah. That's the draw of Burt Reynolds, is just the way he interacts with, you know, his cast mates. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always usually such a likable guy. So many I need to see, but.
Start with Sharky's Machine, because it's really, really good. There's a lot of, just like you said, a lot of good, just kind of colorful character stuff that's in the margins. And you can kind of tell that it's based on a book, because it feels like some of that stuff was carried over. A lot of movies probably wouldn't make the time for the scenes of him and like Richard Libertini. talking about like girls that they used to have a crush on and stuff because they're friends from way back. Just little stuff like that that the movie makes time for. And like I said, there's a long section in the movie that probably could have been taken out and the movie would feel a little bit tighter. But I kind of like having all this extra stuff in the movie. I like that he makes time as a director for all this character stuff. It all really works for me. So I'm a big fan of the movie.
Cool. Yeah. I remember, was it last year that, the new Bev did their Burt Reynolds month. Remember that?
He had passed away last year. So I'm guessing that's what that was for.
And is when Brian and Elric, you know, they were doing the calendar and talking about all these Burt Reynolds movies that I had never heard of for some reason. And, you know, immediately I was like, okay, got to see this. And just started kind of going through his filmography, and he's great in everything he does. The movies, maybe not so much, but you know, he's God, he's always so fun to watch.
Yeah. He's got a bunch of stuff in the 90s that I haven't seen. Some of the like straight to video stuff. And like I tapped out, in the 80s, but yeah, there's so much between the 60s, the 70s and the 80s. There's so much really, really good stuff. I just, for the first time recently, saw Semi-Tough with Kris Kristofferson and Jill Clayburgh. Really, really fun movie. Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah. I like that one. So, you know, some stuff from the 70s that made me a little cringy, but,
sure.
but between those three, but especially those two guys, Burt and Kris Kristofferson, you know, they're just, God, they're so charming, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm watching the whole time thinking, I mean, how can you blame Jill Clayburgh? Like, you know, you're stuck between two of the most charming men in the world, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. And how about your fifth?
My fifth will probably surprise no one. It is from 2006, and it is Michael Mann's cinematic adaptation of his TV show, Miami Vice, a movie I just love. We've been doing this series where we go through our 10 best list, and I know coming up to 2006, Miami Vice was not on my list because the first time I saw it, I was like, that was good. And then I kind of forgot it. And it wasn't honestly until DVD that I rewatched it and completely fell in love with it. And it's like one of my favorite action movies of the 2000s. And it shouldn't be, because it was an insane production where people just quit at one point and said, no, I'm not going back. And they had to rewrite the ending and re-edit the film. Colin Farrell was like coked out of his mind through the entire film, so he barely remembers making it. There's so much stuff that went wrong that shouldn't make for such a good movie. But it's like one of my favorite Michael Mann movies. There's a couple, obviously, Michael Mann movies I could have chosen from, but this one, I won't say it's a better movie than Heat, but if I have to choose between the two, I'll probably watch Miami Vice first, even though I love Heat. Heat's amazing. Yeah, it's just, it's like the action movie as tone poem. It's such a cool approach to shooting an action movie. It's like the one time I think his digital photography has really worked. I didn't love it in Public Enemies. It's a little better in Black Hat, but like Miami Vice is where it all really clicks for me. Collateral, I mean, Collateral's cool too. I like Collateral.
Yeah.
But Miami Vice is my favorite, you know, sort of post-90s Michael Mann, because The Insider is like such an amazing movie too. But I love Miami Vice.
Yeah, it was, I kind of felt the same way as you did when I first saw it in the theater. I was like, you know, it was a fine action movie, whatever, but kind of forgettable. And it wasn't until I started listening to F This Movie, I don't know, 5 years ago or something, and it kept coming up, and, you know, I find out, okay, it's one of Patrick's favorites, and so I went back and rewatched it, and it was the same thing. I was like, my God, this is a fun movie, and it's so gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, it's very Michael Mann.
Yeah.
You know, it is so fun, and, you know, I've watched it half a dozen times, you know, since. So
it is
one. I think Collateral is the Michael Mann film that I watch most. I probably watch it twice a year because I love it so much.
Yeah.
But I think Miami Vice is, I'm kind of with you with Heat. It's, I feel slightly more rewatchable than Heat, I suppose.
Well, it's a little shorter, you know, which helps. It's not a lot shorter, but it's a little shorter, which helps. Yeah, there's just something about the vibe of it that I connect with more, you know. And that's the thing about Michael Mann. He's never a guy that I would call one of my favorite directors. Like, if you ask me to name five directors that I love, I probably wouldn't come up with Michael Mann. And yet, as we're sitting here talking about his movies, we didn't even talk about Thief, which is probably my favorite Michael Mann movie. Thief and Heat and Last of the Mohicans and Collateral and Miami Vice. I mean, he just, The Insider, he's got so many great, great movies that, like, yeah, Michael Mann probably is one of my favorite directors. He's not in the top five, but he's up there. And Miami Vice, for whatever reason, I won't argue that it's better than any of those other movies, but it's the one that I go back to the most, even though, like I said, Thief is probably my favorite of his movies. Miami Vice is the one that I rewatch all the time, that I want to keep going back to, that casts some sort of spell on me that I connect with. And so, yeah, it's definitely a movie that I've, like, talked up way too much, you know, over my years at F This Movie. I keep going back to it, but I love it.
Yeah, no, I don't think you talk it up. I think, I mean, it's for its entertainment value. I mean, it's hard to beat, you know, especially from kind of, you know, that mid-2000s period. And yeah. I mean, you know, Jamie Foxx and Colin Farrell just kind of being them, but they're always fun to watch for me too.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
and his casts are always amazing because he casts every single part with somebody that you're excited to see, you know. So even the first 10 minutes of Miami Vice, it's like, oh, an informant got burned and you got to go find him, and it's John Hawks, you know, or Collateral. Right. It's like they go see Javier Bardem for a 5-minute scene. That's, yeah, like an amazing scene, but just everybody who shows up in his movies is like, you know, actors really want to work with him. So he always casts somebody that you're like, oh my gosh, it's so great to see this person.
I'm kind of with you with Michael Mann. I don't know if he'd be top five. He's probably top 10 for me, but, you know, I always say I love every single Michael Mann movie. The only one I haven't seen is Ali, because especially boxing, I don't really care to watch.
Okay.
And I'm sure it's great. So I start thinking about Michael Mann. Is he a top five director? He might be a top five writer for me. I love his writing, especially. I mean, he's just such a great fucking storyteller.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And then being able to translate that. And I always think, you know, if I ever made a movie, I'd prefer to write and direct it just so I could be able to, because I know, you know, as I'm writing the words, I know what I want to see up on screen. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be confident. I mean, I don't know the first thing about making a movie, but, you know, I think Michael Mann, you know, he's got that down pat where he knows exactly what he's writing and he can see that and translates that well to the screen.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, I think that, he wrote Collateral, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's a great example, just because it's sort of, I don't know, not your typical thriller. It is, but there's something special about it, and maybe it's just the digital photography, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's, for me, that's, you know, that's it. Something I revisit all the time. But the look of Miami Vice is very, it has some sort of warmth. It is like a big hug, I feel like. You know, he shoots action as well as he shoots dramatic moments.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, just like, I think Friedkin can do the same. Is there a Michael Mann movie you don't like?
I don't love Public Enemies. You know, I think it's interesting. I don't love it. And I've never seen The Keep, which is his kind of horror movie that came out in the early 80s. And I think was maybe taken away from him. Like, I don't know if that's officially a Michael Mann movie, because I think it was taken away and re-edited, or there's some story there, and it's harder to see. There is now, I think, like a German DVD that you can import or something that you can check out, but that one I've never seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, Public Enemies is like, it's okay. I don't love it. It's interesting. Yeah. But other than that, I like all the ones that I've seen.
Yeah, great. Thanks to Patrick Bromley of F This Movie for hanging out and talking cop movies with me. Make sure to visit fthismovie.com for some of the best writing on movies you'll find on the internet. And while you're at it, subscribe to F This Movie on your favorite podcast app. And thank you all so much for your support of Neon Badges. The fact that you all give up a little of your hard-earned money so I can do this means the world to me. And tell your friends about Neon Badges. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at AK Donnelly. That's one N, two L's. Thanks again, and I've got some spooky movies for you coming up in October.